I can expect you to be treated the same. It's the same familiarity that you give the white men. And I, sometime after the war, I had made been advanced to a lead position. And there were a couple of black men came in and worked in an area that we worked in that were trying to date some of the white women. And one of them even went by this one young lady's house on a Sunday morning. And on Monday he asked her where she'd been. And he had told her that he'd been by, and she said, well, it's a good thing my husband didn't know you was by. He probably might have killed you. But he was trying to force himself on her on the job. And I finally went to the assistant supervisor and told him that he would have to move that man somewhere else. That we couldn't have him bothering the white women on the job. And he was transferred.
Were his advances towards the women different than advances that white men would make?
Not really. The girls didn't ignore them or anything like that, but you couldn't get overly friendly with them. They took it to mean that you were willing to accept their advances. Well, the white men, you could say a lot of things with a double meaning or anything like that. Or they would just, it would be a joke, something funny to laugh at, and they would think nothing of it. But you didn't talk like that to the black. Especially this one, he had married a Japanese woman. Evidently, he thought that gave him more leeway than others. And I had one black man work for me after the war that had been a personnel officer in the Army. He had been in Germany. The Army of the Occupation Army there for a long time. And I was much older than the people that worked for me. Most of them were young servicemen just out of in their 20s and like that. And I felt about them as I would my own family. I mean, they're guys and gals to me, boys and girls. And this one day I asked Jim, I told Jim and his partner, if you boys would clean up around here, because then you have an inspection after a while. And he informed me that we were not boys, we are men. And I had never thought of it. I mean, what I said was not derogatory in any way. But he didn't like being called boy. And I had never in my life thought of it that way. And at this time, I had Hispanic men that worked for me. I had a couple of them come up, fellas that had come from Texas, that were hard-nosed as anybody you ever saw. And they would not, at first, they informed me that they would not work with these black ones until they found out that some of them were good workers. And then one of my hard-nosed Texans came and asked me if he couldn't have this one especially someone work for him. So, I mean, it could be worked out, but it was, you had to be careful. And you didn't ask anyone any one person to clean up any more than anybody else or anything like that, because you just are asking for trouble. You were picking on them, you were I can't remember the word I want now. If you just didn't, if you told one to clean up, you had to tell somebody else the same way. I had one black man that did not like working for me at all. And he informed me that he would be glad when his 90 days were in. And he had seniority then, and he could tell me where to go. But he didn't stay that long. I had one brother in. My other two were one worked at a General Motors plant in Michigan, building tanks, and the other one was in the two older brothers were both in Michigan working on the in tank factories. My younger brother went into the Navy, so he never was on a ship. He went to Norman, Oklahoma, for basic. Oh, he had basic at La Jolla. Then he went to Norman, Oklahoma, for gunnery training. And from there, he went to the American University in Washington, D.C., where he was taught demolition. And then he came back to California, and they said he was going to the West Coast. And he was thrilled to death. He was going on a ship. And he was up at Inyokern in the desert. And he was there for the duration. They had prisoners, German prisoners of war there. And they had planes, they dropped bombs, and they were trying to find out why there were so many dead in the bombs. So when they would drop a bomb that didn't go off, or they went out with their POWs and dug them up and brought them in, and he worked in a cement vault-like room by himself with the door locked, and took the mechanism out of it to find out why it didn't go off. And he was there over a year. And when he went in, he was so gung-ho. He was married, had a little girl. Just not quite a year old. And his father-in-law was a commander in the Navy and had been in Pearl Harbor at the time of the bombing. And my brother enlisted it. He denied having any relatives whatsoever in the service. He wouldn't admit that he knew anybody in the Navy. He wanted overseas. He wanted duty at sea so bad. He was so disappointed. Never even saw a rowboat.
Was there anyone that you were close to that was
overseas? No. No, I had no other relatives at all that were in.
You know what I wanted to ask you, and I forgot, is the reason for going to work at Douglas was very different, I'm assuming, than the reason that you went to work at Little Run.
I went to work at Douglas because I had to earn a living. And I had left my husband, and I had to have a job. But when I left Willow Run, you weren't supposed to, during the war, you weren't supposed to quit a job. I said, you couldn't quit a job. And I said, well, I was quitting that one because I was coming out here and going to work out here. And that was the only way I could get out of that job back there. So that after I got here, there was no way they could make me go to work. Except that, as I said, I had been a living, I had kids to support.
Was your attitude about that job different from
your attitude
for
general? No. I liked my job. That was all. And I stayed on with Douglas. I quit Douglas in 1950.
And I
was laid off twice after the war. Four months at a time. The second 4 months, I took off and went back to Michigan and got my divorce. And then I went up to Santa Monica. I worked at the Santa Monica plant for over a year. I drove from Arcee to Santa Monica, if you can imagine that. About a 40-mile drive. And we started at 4 o'clock. I left home at 5:30 in the morning. Started work at 7. Got off at 3:30. And then I was up 40. Sometime in 46, I'd gone up there. And like I said, I worked there almost a year. We were working on the DC-6 at that, by that time. And President Roosevelt private plane used to come back up there for reworking, tuning up. And a couple of times, his crew was on his the sacred palace, it's called. He had the most gorgeous crew you ever saw in your life. I don't remember how many there were in it, but it was 6 or 8 of the most gorgeous men that flew that ship. And then we made it. We built a plane special for one of the persons. This was in 47, must have been for Truman. Because I was working on the elevator at that time. And they passed around and a long, long sheet of paper, and we all signed it, and it went to Washington with the plane. All of us that had worked on it. I can't remember who that plane was for. But my brother was telling it. My one brother worked at the Buick plant during the war, my oldest brother. And they built a very special Buick for Mrs. Roosevelt. And he was in final inspection. And he said that plane, or that car, had all kinds of scrolls that went with it, with all the names of all the people that worked on it. And after I'd been at Santa Monica for about a year, I heard they were hiring at Long Beach again. In fact, some of the people that I had done, we had talked with, he drove back and forth, and some of the guys said they had gotten recall notices to Long Beach. And I haven't gotten one yet, but I called one of the foremen down there, and he said if I could get a transfer, he'd give me a job. So I went to my personnel office in Santa Monica, and they said, no, but we're in transfer from one plant to the other. And I said, well, I just have to come in the time then, because I had a job at the Long Beach plant waiting for me. He didn't believe me. So I gave him the foreman's name, and he called. And that week Friday, I had a transfer, and I transferred back down here. And I was never laid off again. But laid off many times after that. Sometimes it would get within four or five of me, but they never quite caught up with my 3 or 4 years seniority that I had. But then our problem, we didn't have racial problems. We had problems with returning soldiers. And they wanted to know why in the hell the women didn't get out of the plant and go back, stay at home and raise the kids. They got the jobs back. So every one of them was promised a job back when they left. But they still thought that there were too many women staying on in the plant, and I couldn't understand it. Some of us had to work. We weren't working for the fun of it, or the joy of being around them, or anything else. And there were several of them that were quite bitter about women staying on in the plant, and they had no business there. They talked obnoxiously about it, but that was, it wore off. I mean, after a while, they got used to the idea. And there was never any real problems about it. It was just that it was a sore spot, and I could understand the guy's problems. I mean, the way they felt about it. I would gladly have stayed home if I hadn't had to work. And we were building, at that time, a C-74, I think it was. It was just a cargo plane. It was one of them. We only built 13 of them. Our work was very scattered out. You never knew for how long you were going to have a job, because government wasn't buying planes. We built a lot of spare parts for planes that had been built. And when we were building the 74, I was way up on the end, the start of the smaller part. And we only had, as I said, 13 or 14 of those to build. We built this part, and we'd go build 13 or 14 of something else. Pretty soon we were down on fuselage panels. We got that finished, and I ended up over in the insulating. We'd hang insulation in between the panels, or between the ribs of the plane, and then we had upholstery. They cut the pieces of fabric, thick fabric, and we put the buttons in, and then there were holes drilled and upholstered the inside. We upholstered the cockpit. We were all over the plane. I mean, we were inside, up, top side, all over the fellas in. But that was one of the most interesting parts of his job that it. So I found out I was allergic to fiberglass. That was what we were insulating it with, and they cut it in strips like this, maybe 6-8 feet long, throw it around your shoulders. And next thing you knew, your neck was all broke out. I really did. I enjoyed working. I didn't mind climbing. It's no problem. We enjoyed our work, most of us.